You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. We're actually steps and steps. Well, you know the deal. On the program today, Greg Gonzalez, assistant professor of epidemiology and microbial diseases at Yale School of Public Health. What will the summer look like? Meanwhile, Trump's firing of the State Department IG halted an investigation into possible illegal Saudi arms sales. Florida reopens and closes their data. Meanwhile, China may lock down 100 million people again. Trump administration to short America 40,000 frontline coronavirus workers to save retirement and education benefits. Trump claims he's on hydroxy. No one believes him. Biden says he'll yank Keystone XL pipeline permit. Israel looking for U.S. approval of West Bank annexation for fear that Joe Biden might win in November. Official hearing has been requested to fight Barr's Flynn's charge quashing. A Republican PAC to dump $10 million in Montana as the GOP fears a Senate loss. And Republicans are now claiming they're going to hold an in-person convention. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program. Glad you could join us. Got a lot to get through today. Just a little bit of house cleaning. At the end of the show yesterday, again, we got involved in the conversation of people calling in to tell me that they can't vote for Joe Biden. And that's all well and good. If you want to call in and say that you don't want to vote for Joe Biden, don't tell me you don't want to vote for him because he's a bad person. Okay? I may or may not agree with you. I don't care. If you want to call in and tell me that you have a strategy as to why voting or not voting for Joe Biden, voting for somebody else, and I'm talking about in a potential swing state. If you're in a blue state or a red state, there is no strategy involved in it. So you can vote, you vote as you vote. And look, and I'll be clear, you can vote any way you want. You don't have to call in either. I just want to be clear. I'm not your dad. And frankly, my kids don't listen to me either. But call in with a strategy. If you can make a case that people are going to be better off with Donald Trump in office, make the case. I get that there's some people who, from an emotional standpoint, can't bring themselves to do it. I have an opinion on that, but whatever. And I will say this. If you email me and tell me that you're going to quit the membership or stop listening to the show because of something I say, I'm going to make it clear to you now. I'm going to save you your email. Like, I don't care. I will, if I had the ability to prevent your IP from listening when people say that, that is the only way that I will, it's really the only thing that I really genuinely annoys me is not that you're actually leaving the show. that's fine. It's that you think that that makes a difference. Like that I do this, you know, that would make a difference. And, you know, the idea, again, that there are no people who support Joe Biden or that would, there are no people who would be upset. So I want to make it clear. Because somebody had emailed me and said that, like, because it was, who was it from Vegas that called in?
Broflamingo.
Yeah, Broflamingo from Las Vegas. Like, how could you, you know, make that argument with a black person? And I'm like, and I want to be clear, Broflamingo did not have an issue with me pushing back because of his color. But I will say this. Biden won 58% of the black vote on Super Tuesday. He won 61% of the black vote in South Carolina. He won 2/3 of the black vote in Michigan. He won even higher margins among African Americans in Arizona, Florida, and Illinois. And so I have no problem with Joe Biden announcing that he's, you know, not going to seek the nomination anymore. I would be ecstatic, to be honest with you. I would encourage people to when primaries are coming up, to vote for Bernie Sanders. But the idea that the votes of the most consistently voting Democratic voting bloc are irrelevant because they're just listening to James Clyburn, and maybe they were. I don't know. I don't know what makes people vote for anything. But they'd be perfectly willing to say, like, oh, okay, somebody else decides that that Joe Biden shouldn't be the nominee, then I'm okay with that. I think it's wrong. And if you don't want to listen to the show because I say that, this is what you should do. Not listen to the show. Is that obvious? All right. I just needed to get that off my chest because I don't even want to get into these, these debates. I really don't. I find them tiresome. But we had like 3 callers who called in about that. And it gets annoying after a while. I mean, I think we have said it ad nauseum. I certainly don't need anybody to tell me how bad Joe Biden is. I've been talking about how bad Joe Biden is since before both my kids were alive. Now, the one thing that helps me calm down, though, after a situation like that, Sunset Lake CBD. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they're sponsoring the program all this week. They are located in Alberg, Vermont, just outside of Burlington. They are originally one of the dairy farms for Ben & Jerry's ice cream. They decided to diversify their farm, start growing hemp. They have great business practices, pesticide free. They use organic fertilizer. Their minimum wage is $15 an hour. The employees own a majority of the company. They've got all sorts of CBD products. For me, I am very much down with the tincture. I have the 750 milligrams. I take a dropper. I sleep like a baby. But they have smokables like this. Matt can talk about those in a moment. But if you don't like to smoke, they have gummies too, which I'm going to hit up on their, and they also have, salves, for muscles and joints. And, it all smells amazing. They have a coffee that is a dark roast infused with CBD from the 2019 harvest. You got to check this out. You can go to sunsetlakecbd.com. Matt, just put a plug for the smokables since you're the expert.
Yeah, I guess I'm the expert. Smokables are very good. I was skeptical of CBD, but this is, I think, maybe because of the process they use. It's very pesticide-free, farmer-owned. Very good stuff. I enjoy smoking it. It's nice before bed, actually, if you have. So even if you smoke other things that might make you paranoid, this won't do that nearly as much. It'll just make you a bit more sleepy.
It just gives you the sort of the physical feelings more than the psychoactive feelings, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
That's how you describe it?
Yeah.
I mean, I know what I'm talking about. it's sunsetlakecbd.com. If you use the coupon code LEFTISBEST, one word, LEFTISBEST, and those are three words, but you put them together, LEFTISBEST, you get 20% off anything on the site. So check it out. It is sunsetlakecbd.com. All right. Speaking of taking things that are apparently really calming, Donald Trump announces that he has decided that, you know, apparently he's taking prophylactic hydroxychloroquine. I didn't know that it was prescribed as a prophylactic, but let's listen.
Signed it, and a lot of good things have come out about the hydroxy. A lot of good things have come out, and you'd be surprised at how many people are taking it, especially the frontline workers. Before you catch it, the frontline workers, many, many are taking it. I happen to be taking it. I happen to be taking it.
Hydroxychloroquine.
I'm taking it. Hydroxychloroquine.
When?
Right now, yeah.
Yeah. When?
A couple of weeks ago, I started taking it. Because I think it's good. I've heard a lot of good stories. And if it's not good, I'll tell you right, I'm not going to get hurt by it. It's been around for 40 years for malaria, for lupus, for other things. I take it. Frontline workers take it. A lot of doctors take it. Excuse me. A lot of doctors take it. I take it. Now, I hope to not be able to take it soon because, you know, I hope they come up with some answer. But I think people should be allowed to. I got a letter from a doctor the other day from Westchester, New York, around the area.
I read all my letters. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. He's announcing that he's taking this. Now, the weird thing about it is that they released a letter from his physician. And I'm going to read it right now. As has been previously reported, 2 weeks ago, one of President's support staff tested positive for COVID-19. Okay, that's true. The president is in very good health. All right. And has remained symptom-free. He receives regular COVID-19 testing, all negative to date. Okay, this is the subject line on this, incidentally, was hydroxychloroquine. After numerous discussions, he and I, regarding the evidence for and against the use of hydroxychloroquine, we concluded the potential benefit from treatment outweighed the relative risks. Okay, we could have that conversation too. In conclusion, with our interagency partners and subject matter experts around the country, I continue to monitor the myriad of studies investigating potential COVID-19 therapies, and I anticipate employing the same shared medical decision-making based on the evidence at hand in the future. In other words, I'm not going to sign a document that says you're taking it. I think that's what that letter from the president's physician says. There you go. Meanwhile, folks, couple of advertisements, and then we will get to our guest. As you know, sometimes very difficult to find time to read, particularly if you have children or if you're a busy person. I guess, I mean, I have no idea what that means. If you don't have a children, what it means to be busy. But there's an incredible app called Blinkist. I've talked to you about it before. Great way of learning new things, getting ahead, rounding out some of your knowledge base. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books. They condense them down into 15 minutes. You can listen to them. You can read them. You can watch on your, you can listen on your phone. You can listen on your iPad, your web browser. It's made for busy people who want the main points of a book quickly. They make it easy to finish a book during whatever, your commute. I don't know if people are commuting these days, but I don't know, before you go to bed, before you have breakfast, as you're working out, whatever it is. for me, it's been a lifesaver in terms of rounding out and basically books that I don't really want to invest the time in. Because I feel like, you know, I've told you about the 4-hour work week. That was very helpful. And, you know, literally that whole book probably could have been written with bullet points. I mean, with all due respect to the author. But, you know, stuff like Everything Trump Touches Dies by Rick Wilson. That's a nice 15-minute pick-me-up. I don't need to read the whole thing. But it's it makes it super easy to round out your knowledge base. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access. You can read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all for one low price. For a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/majority report. Try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, Blinkist.com/majority report to start your 7-day free trial. And then you save 25% when you continue on. Sign up now, Blinkist.com/majority report. Everybody in the office loves Liquid IV. In fact, it's probably one of the few things that the whole crew misses about the office is the Liquid IV that's there. Look, proper hydration, crucial for your immune system. It can boost your immunity. Liquid IV is an easy, healthy solution for dehydration. Liquid IV has more vitamin C than an orange, has as much potassium as a banana, has vitamins B3, B5, B6, B12, vitamins that are known to help your body defend against infections and made effective through cellular transport technology. One serving of Liquid IV provides the same hydration as drinking 2 to 3 bottles of water alone. It's healthier than sugary sports drinks. There are no artificial flavors in it. There are no preservatives and less sugar than an apple. Plus, Liquid IV is donating 2.3 million servings in response to COVID-19, with products being donated to hospitals, first responders, food banks, veterans, and active military. For me, I love the matcha because I like the energy boost as well. But I've been taking Liquid IV when I was traveling. I would take it all the time. When I'm indulging too much these days, I'm basically having a packet every morning or maybe before I go to bed. They also have one, I think, that provides better sleep, but it can boost your immunity. It can give you better energy. Check it out. You'll love it. Liquid IV is available nationwide at Target, Whole Foods, and Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code MajorityRep at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order with promo code MajorityRep at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com. Promo code MajorityRep. You can also find them nationwide, like I say, at Target, Whole Foods, or Costco. And lastly, if you've got a business, if you're starting a business at home, if you're shipping stuff on a regular basis, Shippo is your new secret weapon. Shippo is the only shipping software for growing businesses that you can start today. You can set it up in minutes and then ship today. Shippo's volume discounts save you up to 90% off of carrier rates. Simply connect your online store to Shippo. No coding. You don't have to have technical expertise. None of that. You instantly see the lowest shipping rates from over 55 top global carriers like UPS, USPS, FedEx, DHL, all of them. Just click print and ship. Plus, automated return labels are free. You only pay if your customers use them. Companies that use Shippo, they save thousands of dollars. They free up tons of hours, and they grow on average 77% each year. We're going to get in that. Join over 100,000 companies like Goat, Hims, MeUndies who use Shippo. For our listeners, they're offering their best discount available anywhere. You get a shipping consultation and Shippo Pro Plan 6-month trial for free at goshippo.com/report. That's up to $700 value for free at goshippo.com/report. Go right now, get your shipping consultation and Shippo Pro Plan 6-month trial for free at goshippo, shippo.com/report. We will put all the links to these in the podcast description and the YouTube description. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Greg Gonzalez. He is an assistant professor of epidemiology and microbial disease at Yale School of Public Health. Also an associate professor of law and research at Yale Law. We're going to talk to him about what we can expect this summer and what we should be doing and what we could be doing. Be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Greg Gonzalez. He's an assistant professor in epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health, as well as an associate professor of law and research scholar at Yale Law School, and the co-director of the Global Health Justice Partnership. Welcome to the program, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, let's just start. You had written on, I think it was March 13th, which, you know, for me, maybe it was the 12th, was sort of because I'm from New York. My kids didn't go back to school after that day. I think it was a Thursday, maybe. That's sort of when at least the reaction to the epidemic or the pandemic, I should say, started in my world, or dramatic reaction, I guess. But you were anticipating that we would have many of the problems that we were having, that we're having now, because you were seeing that we had no preparedness. Give me a sense of how, from that point, would you say that we are performing above, you know, if zero is the sort of like, you know, the baseline, are we below, performing in terms of our response before, above or below that?
Well, it depends if you're talking about the federal response or the state-based response. Or the city or city-based response. At the federal level, we're slightly less than sort of catastrophically awful. Remember, you know, we're about to, probably over the next few days, we'll hit 100,000 cases of deaths in the United States from COVID. Just think about the number of people who died in 9/11. You're a New Yorker, so am I. 3,000 people died in one day. Let's multiply that now from how many 9/11s we've seen in just a few months from COVID-19. So the federal response is a disaster and an abdication. There are different states, you know, trying to do the best thing and trying to sort of logically and methodically sort of reopen their economies while ensuring that we don't have a fast resurgence of virus. There are cities like San Francisco that had an early and sort of robust response that was able to keep their numbers low. New York City didn't do so well because it delayed. There's a lot of infighting in New York City. So in New York State, so New York City didn't fare as well as San Francisco. So, as a country as a whole, I'm a professor. You know, maybe I'll be nice and I won't fail us, but, you know, it's definitely D minus.
So, I mean, give us a sense too of what we know that we didn't know then about the virus. I mean, there's so much information that comes out, ranging from the strain that seems to be on the East Coast that emanated out of New York exists on the West Coast only 43%. The rest of it is a different genetic strain. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well,
no, so there's really no difference. There's really, you know, viruses have lots of different sort of genetic signatures, right? And the viruses that are we're talking about SARS-CoV-2, we're talking about one virus circulating in the United States. you know, what we are knowing more than we did when this started is about the sort of extent of its spread and its ability to get transmitted in different situations. We have a good sense of what kinds of people have been at risk. You know, nobody would have sort of guessed back in March that, you know, we'd see these acute Kawasaki-like syndrome diagnoses in children who we were all told, you know, were going to be milder, have milder asymptomatic infections. And so, you know, we're learning a lot about this virus as we go along. I think we're seeing things that, you know, we probably expected. We're seeing hotspots in meatpacking plants and nursing homes and prisons. But that's sort of basic epidemiology 101. These are all places that are, people are packed together in pretty tight quarters. So we're learning some new things. We're learning some sort of old, tried and true facts about how infectious diseases spread in communities. And you know, we're not even 6 months into this.
So is the, are the new things, I mean, what, of the, of COVID-19 is, unique or surprising relative to what we would anticipate? I mean, obviously, the thing that makes it a pandemic is its ability to transmit to other people, right? It's the R-naught that they call it. Is there something about the disease itself and what it does to the human body that is particularly unique in terms of what we've seen with diseases like in general?
Well, you know, one is we have to, you know, firmly put this. And so this is a viral outbreak of a respiratory disease. And, you know, we've seen its cousin SARS appear in the early 2000s. You know, we've seen things like MERS, which are also related to it. What I think is unique about this is that the rapidity with which it spread around the world. So I think, you know, the question about whether asymptomatic people can transmit probably was in contention a few months ago, but I think people do understand now that people with mild or asymptomatic infections can transmit. I think no one was sure about what kinds of sort of clinical phenomenon we'd see. And, you know, there have been the, all the reports of people not being on ventilators and, you know, for those with severe disease. But again, we have these new sort of manifestations like the outbreak of sort of this Kawasaki-like disease syndrome in kids. We're also seeing sort of neurological and other parts of your body sort of tangled up with this virus when we think of it as just a respiratory infection a few months ago.
You mentioned the ability for asymptomatic people to transmit. What, how does, like, I mean, do we have a timeline for that? I mean, my understanding, you know, like when we talk about quarantining, we do it self-quarantining, we do it for like 14 days, correct? I mean, and presumably that's because I suspect that I was infecting somebody or I had been infected within 14 days. What's supposed to happen within 14 days? And what is the timeline if I'm asymptomatic in terms of how contagious I am? Do we know that?
I think we're learning this as we go along. But if you think you've been exposed to somebody with COVID-19, frankly, if I knew I was exposed to somebody with COVID-19 in the same household or in a healthcare setting or in some sort of workplace setting, I would self-isolate for 14 days to protect those around me from any potential exposure to the virus through me, even if I had a mild or asymptomatic infection. And so this is going to be the problem as we go on. There's going to be, you know, as we open up the country and people are going out to bars and restaurants and thinking everything is normal, this virus is silently sort of wending its way through our communities through the force of these asymptomatic infections or these people who seem to have a headache, have a little cough, but are still out in public. And so, yeah, I mean, if you think you've been exposed, you need to step aside and isolate for your own benefit and the benefit of your friends and family. So whether you're symptomatic or asymptomatic, if you feel like you've been exposed, you need to do the right thing.
So is the window of you being contagious only 14 days? I mean, if you're asymptomatic, let's say, is it the same as if you're sick? Because if you get sick over the course of that 14 days, then you know you have it and you stay, I guess, isolated until you're feeling better. But if you're asymptomatic, how long do we know how long you're contagious for? Are you more or less contagious if you're asymptomatic? or do we just don't know at this point?
Look, I don't think we know the sort of details. I think, you know, the reason we're saying stay apart from your friends and family for 14 days is because within two to 14 days after exposure to virus, you generally develop symptoms, and that's been sort of the sort of rule of thumb. Is it based on ironclad facts and figures? I think we're talking about in general a 2-week period of isolation is the thing to do, right?
Right. Okay. I mean, fair enough. I mean, these are just things that I know people have, asked, and obviously I don't know, and it's unclear to me, some of these things you start to get into the specifics of it, and you start to just, one of the things that I think we've lacked in the context of this is these broad explanations from any type of, I guess, official authorities or something. So let's talk a little bit about, what you anticipate. And we should say that obviously, and we can talk a little bit about sort of the structural problems that we have as a society, which have made us particularly vulnerable to this. But when we're going forward in the summer, like what are you anticipating happening? I mean, because there's this sort of general feeling that people just sort of feel like, well, it's gone away or it's something's changed, but nothing has really changed in terms of our relationship to the virus, has it?
No, it hasn't. I mean, look, what is this, week 7 or 8 of the lockdown? Everybody's tiring of this, right? Everybody is trying to think of a future without COVID-19 and trying to get back to normal. What we've seen is a set of public policies by wishful thinking. We need to restart the economy. People are suffering not just sort of from the disease itself, but the economic impact of businesses being shut down, either temporarily or permanently. The point is that the virus hasn't changed what it's doing, from 4 weeks ago to now. It's taking advantage of communal gatherings and people being in the same place together in close personal contact, to transmit itself. And so, lots of the states that have been reopening have said it's an economic imperative that we have to do it. But many of them were seeing cases increase as they did this, when even the White House's own guidance says you want 2 weeks of decline in cases, right? You want to have testing in place and contact tracing in place, the ability to isolate infected people so that we can open responsibly. The whole idea that we can't do this is slightly ludicrous to me. Whether it's Germany or South Korea or Singapore or Hong Kong or New Zealand, lots of these countries are doing this. They've done it well, and when they've seen a resurgence, they've swung into action doing testing, contact tracing up the wazoo and isolating people who are lingeringly infected. And so we keep thinking, as the president says, it's just going to disappear one day. It's overnight. It's going to go poof. It's going to disappear. The point is that it's not. And what I think many people are thinking is now we're going to have this long, slow burn of people getting sick and people dying. And, I have an 86-year-old mother. It's going to be elderly people and people who, we're supposed to treasure, our parents and our grandparents. It's going to be, kids who may be less risk than an 85-year-old, but could get a serious complication that sends them, into the cardiac care unit. So, we're going to see a summer of sort of waves of infection in different places. We're going to see attempts to sort of contain these outbreaks, but there's really no infrastructure that's been established. I mean, we've had since, February and March now to establish an infrastructure so we could have massive testing, massive contact tracing, isolation, economic supports beyond, a $1,200 check here and a little bit more unemployment there. We just haven't done it. We sort of, this is the ostrich version of public policy, sticking your head in the ground and thinking it's going to go away. And so the summer will be fun for lots of people, and they'll think it's all fun and games, and they'll be at the beach or they'll be in bars and they'll be in restaurants. Many of them will go back to work. But some of those coworkers, some of those friends and family who they have a barbecue with or go over to their houses to have dinner with are going to get sick. And, in a few weeks, a few days, we'll pass the 100,000 mark. Let's see how close we get to 200,000 by the end of the summer.
And I mean, but is there, and I have to say, I mean, it feels to me, and I think there's, you know, there's some, at least some reporting that the Trump administration is just basically the less tests means the less verified cases, and the less verified cases theoretically, and I think in their minds, like, you know, the less people will panic and the stock market won't fall. I think that's insane, but, you know, it's not necessarily not par for the course for them. But is there a way that we can avoid, we can get to the other side of, you know, when the virus basically dies out? Is there a way to avoid, isn't there like a minimum amount of deaths that are probably going to have to happen? Or, you know, assuming we don't have a vaccine or have developed, you know, treatments that are better, or are basically what we're trying to do right now is slow the infection rate, slow the amount of time that we get to like 60% or 70% so that we have time to figure out how to treat this better and save more lives and road to that. Infection rate, I guess, or infection number.
I think it's very hard for people to comprehend that as a nation, we made a decision, whether it's by default or on purpose, you know, we can argue about it in the history books, but we made a decision that there was going to be no policy, right? And so, you know, the rational thing to do would be to say, you know what, we understand the incredible economic peril that this response to this virus has put on people's lives. And we're going to do what countries like Denmark and others have done in terms of supporting their corporations, their small businesses, and importantly, the workers in their society by providing, you know, up to 80 to 90% of salary support. We could have said two months ago, you know, we're going to scale up testing, contact tracing and isolation to a degree that made us, you know, first in the world. We decided not to do it. And so instead we're opening up economies. I think 49 out of 50 states are sort of opening in some way over the next few days. And we are going to see more deaths than we need to see. You know, the question is we made an implicit decision that, you know, we're willing to sacrifice another 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people because we couldn't get it together to do what other countries have done around the world. I understand that, you know, this is going to be for the long haul, right? And we have to figure out how to live our lives in the context of COVID-19. But you don't start from sort of the worst possible position and say that's the defensible one. So we're going to have to figure out how to move through this. But I think that the innovation and the leadership is going to have to come from the states, but it's not coming from the White House.
When you look at the states, are there states that stand out to you as being particularly that have done a good job since day one, that have picked up the quality of their response?
Yeah, you know, look, California has done a remarkable job. You know, there was an article in the Times yesterday, the day before, about the tale of two epidemics, San Francisco versus New York City. New York had a squabble between the mayor and the governor, the health department and the head of Health and Hospitals Corporation. And so you had two or more weeks of sort of delays in getting on the ball with the virus. And probably that sort of political mess locally led to tens of thousands of additional infections. In general, There are states, Republican and Democratically led, Larry Hogan in Maryland, Charlie Baker in Massachusetts, two Republicans, lots of states in the Northeast corridor, in New England and in the Mid-Atlantic, out on the West Coast, who have really taken this seriously. That's opposed to states like Georgia and Florida who have never taken this very seriously at all. And now there's a question in Florida if they've been massaging the data. The same in Georgia. And so, there are states that have really sort of taken, the lead on trying to combat COVID-19. And, you know, when we talk about states, we have to be careful because there are dedicated public health professionals, physicians, and community advocates, you know, fighting for public health all over the country. But the decisions that get made, the buck stops really at the level of the governors. And, you know, we've had, you know, a large chunk of the governors in the U.S. sort of abdicate, sort of in lockstep with the president, who refused to see the sort of urgency of what's happening around him.
Are there broad principles that you think people should be, because we are, you know, in many respects, left to our own individual devices in many respects, and more so, I think, you know, in some states than others, because, you know, I mean, I'm getting my constant updates from NYC COVID and New York State COVID. I don't know if that exists in a place like Florida, where they really do seem to want to just, if we don't put in the front page of the paper, I think they think that it's just not there. Go ahead.
So there are people at the University of Florida, University of Miami, who are wonderful public health professionals, whether they're physicians or epidemiologists, biostatisticians. So there's lots of local knowledge that people can rely on. There's also sort of sound national sources for information. Stat News aggregates a lot of the health articles that are coming out in the U.S. by the sort of premier health journalists in the country. You know, the health journalism that we're seeing in many of our national papers, like New York Times, is pretty damn good in terms of tracking what's going on. So there's guidance. I think what we have to realize is that summer's coming and we all want to be outdoors. That's a good thing, but being outdoors in a concert or in a house party or a block party or on a beach where you're cheek by jowl with people is probably not super useful. You know, we need to enforce sort of a idea of harm reduction in our own lives and figure out how we're going to keep our friends and family safe. If you can work from home, keep working from home. If you can't do that, you know, make sure that your workplace has the necessary safeguards in place to keep you as safe as possible. And if it's not a safe work environment, you know, you need to figure out how you're going to organize to make it that way. But, you know, your employer shouldn't be putting your life at risk. You know, if you need to go into an establishment, to a bank or some other commercial venue, you know, see what kind of sort of safety measures they have in place. The idea is to minimize your harm over the next, we're not going to see a vaccine, you know, even though there's sort of, you know, wild triumphalism by the White House, we're not going to see a vaccine for quite a while. You know, I remember in 1986 or 84, Margaret Heckler, who was Reagan's Secretary of Health and Human Services, will have a vaccine in 2 years.
This is for AIDS.
4 years later.
This is for AIDS. In 84, you're saying.
Yeah, I just can't remember. It's a long time ago. We were told we'd have a vaccine for HIV in 2 years. We're being told we'll have a vaccine for COVID in 3 months, 4 months, 6 months. So we're just going to have to sort of figure out how we can live with this virus and not go sort of over the deep end and sort of just think that this is summer 2019 because it's now the summer of COVID.
So in terms of broad principles, obviously social distance, you want to be in place where there's airflow or not. You don't want to be, I mean, because we don't know, right? I mean, like I was, you know, contemplated, like, do I want to carry around a little personal mini fan that just keeps air flowing across? I mean, but it also occurs to me that could be sucking in air, right? And if there's somebody who's asymptomatic, and I mean, so what are the principles?
Wear your mask, wear your gloves. You know, if you're indoors in a restaurant, you know, you don't know what the airflow patterns in there. You don't know where the air ducts are and how air is moving downstream from you and upstream from you over your table. You don't know who's sitting at the table next to you who could be asymptomatic. So, you know, I love going out to eat, and it's going to be something I'm going to think about really long time before I think I can do it safely. Eating outdoors, takeaway, great. Being indoors in a restaurant right now doesn't seem like it's a thing I want to do to put my family at risk.
What other things like that? So you're not going to eat indoors. I can't imagine going to a restaurant to eat.
Takeout.
And I wouldn't go to a movie. I wouldn't go to a concert. But if I'm in like a, my understanding is if I'm in like in a big box store and I maintain some distance, I should be okay as long as I'm wearing a mask, obviously.
And gloves.
And gloves. How much of a danger is surface transmission, particularly with stuff like the takeout? Like how worried should we be when we get takeout?
So, you know, the point is that, you know, if you're me, we've been going to the grocery store and I wear a mask and I wear gloves and I wash my hands when I get the groceries in the house, and I wash them again after I unpack them and put them away and the bags go in the trash. You know, the point is I'm trying to minimize harm. And, you know, the reason I wear gloves in the store is because I figure there's lots of touch points in the store where people have put their hands before me. You know, I also bring, you know, antibacterial wipes, which I've had in the house, you know, to the store and wipe down the cart. I mean, you know, it all seems, like overkill, but, you know, we all now know too many people who've had, if they've not gotten sick themselves, they have a friend or a relative who has. And so when you're in these situations where, you know, there's people like a grocery store or a big box store, you want to be able to make sure that they have, you know, sufficient room. And, you know, I went by Home Depot yesterday and there's a line to get in. They're metering the number of people who went to that store. You had to wear a mask. You know, there was tape on the floor at the register, so you were 6 feet away from the next person in front of you. You know, all these sort of precautions are going to be, need to be in place. You know, is it safe as just staying home and dealing with essentials? No, but a lot of people don't have that option. And so right. We have to make the world safer for those around us.
What are your expectations in terms of where we go here if you had to graph? I mean, obviously on March 12th, you had a sense of, you know, of where we were headed. When you look to the end of the summer, and then when you look into, let's say, you know, by December, do you anticipate the next 3 months being fundamentally different from the following 3 months? Are there particular, is there particular points on the timeline that you're particularly concerned about? Is that geographic? Is that concerned, you know, a function of geography or what?
So, you know, prediction is hard, especially about the future, right? And I think, you know, I'm not going to make any prognostications where we're going to be in December, but, you know, I think it's not unreasonable to think that we've set the conditions for endemicity, basically having COVID with us for a very long time. We haven't done what other countries have done where, you know, there's no case, you know, they quickly swept in, got their initial cases under control, and when they've seen the other ones come in, they've gotten them under control as well. Now, you know, it's in every nook and cranny across the United States. So I think we're going to see it for months and years ahead. What worries me most is flu season. Flu season is, you know, not that far away from us. And I remember in late fall of last year, the hospitals here in New Haven were already sort of struggling to cope with the sort of flu cases that were around us. And so think of COVID and flu happening together next winter. You know, 50% of people get vaccinated for the flu and we have no vaccine for COVID. You know, we could see a double whammy happen in the winter. But, you know, if you look, you know, you're starting to see outbreaks in places with meatpacking plants and prisons around the country. You're seeing places that have already had sort of weak public health infrastructures, you know, having to deal with, you know, the cases in terms of 100,000 people per capita. You know, they're in small towns and small counties in the South and the rural Midwest. And so, you know, the ability for some of these counties to handle what's coming at them or what they're experiencing now is going to be really difficult. And so, you know, it just, I wish to God, you know, somebody would sort of answer the phone in the White House and we'd all say, like, we're going to hit the reset button and take this more seriously. But, you know, now, you know, it's up to you to sort of keep your friends and family safe. It's up to you to speak out when you see workplace conditions or other conditions that are unsafe, and not in a shaming way, but to sort of say, look, you know, these conditions are unsafe for you and your customers. And I think we also have to sort of do what I learned during the AIDS epidemic, is that, you know, you need to hold your local, state, and federal leaders to account, because we are at their mercy in some ways. We can do them as much social distancing as we can, but, you know, getting testing up and running, getting contact tracing up and running, getting isolation up and running, making sure we have the social and economic support we're going to all need for months and years to come to sort of manage this sort of, not even once in a generation, once in a century sort of catastrophe, means we're going to need to put pressure on those we have in power, whether we voted for them or not.
Greg Gonzalez, professor of epidemiology at Yale School of Public Health and professor of law and research at the Yale Law School. Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Anytime. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right, folks. There you have it. I think people, for the most part, know the general principles that you got to follow. Close quarters, not good. I think, you know, my understanding of the literature on this suggests that most transmissions happen where people catch it outside and then bring it home to multiple family members. Not necessarily outside. I mean, outside the home. There's not a lot of documented cases of people catching it outside, per se, but I, you know, it's hard to know how much. I think that's also a function of like wearing a mask and whatnot. So, stay safe. Nothing really has dramatically, changed, and we have really, screwed the pooch in many respects. And the pooch can't get unscrewed, as it were. We shall endeavor to persevere, I guess. Pick that up from Josie Wales. I think it was Outlaw Josie Wales, that movie. Anyways, folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. When you join the Majority Report, not only do you get the free half free of commercials, although we should, you know what, Matt, will you keep the CBD in for members today?
Sure.
Let them just hear that, because we want to get that deal out to everybody, because fans of the show, and it's also very helpful. Believe me, I'm hit that stuff hard, I think, maybe earlier in the day. But be that as it may, your support makes this show possible, and when you become a member, we give you extra content almost every single day. Almost every single day. Not always, but the vast majority of times. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget the AM Quickie, amquickie.com. You can sign up there. Don't forget, check out TMBS. They're live tonight. Matt, who's on TMBS this week?
Give me 1 second. I need to pull that up. It's Wozni Lambre.
All right, Woz.
Is going to be on, and we have another guest here. I think they emailed me the outline. Yes, here it is. And we have, oh, it's just Wozni Lambre, and then Daniel Bessner in the post game. So, yeah.
There it is. You can check that out at on Michael Brooks's YouTube page. That's youtube.com/The Michael Brooks Show. You can go to Patreon, patreon.com/TMBS. And Nomi.
Morning. Afternoon well, there. Morning.
Good
here.
Afternoon here.
also feels like afternoon here.
How have you been?
I've been well. It's hot in Arizona. That's the update. We've made it into the endless summer. There's two seasons in Arizona. There's a not summer, but almost summer and summer. So
super hot and super, super hot.
Yes, exactly. So no, things are the same, you know, cooking, fighting.
You're cooking.
Family.
That's good.
A lot of cooking. I've become the house cook. I've declared myself the master. Well, like, you know,
you got to speak softly now because you're about to criticize your whole family.
It's not like I'm airing or anything. You know, I'm like a little bit of a foodie snob. I think it's I think New York does that to you. Anybody who lives in New York knows what I'm talking about. And just, I'm used to those standards, so I'm experimenting. I didn't know I had these skills. It's,
there you
might
go.
Be what I fall back on, being the
house cook. What's happening on The show. Nomi Key Show.
So this week we have Reed Lindsay, who's an investigative reporter. He has actually been based, he's been based in Cuba for the last 2 years doing extraordinary reporting. He's done a lot of investigative work all over the world, Libya, Egypt, during the Arab Spring. But he's been in Cuba and he's been covering how Cuba has responded pretty effectively to COVID and sent out doctors all around the world to aid other countries. And it's a really fascinating interview. Like, I learned that Cuban doctors, highly trained, that are being sent all over, there's a monetary aspect of it. So Cuba actually earns money, and so do these doctors, when they work with other countries that need their assistance. And it's not just through COVID, it's other, you know, other crises that might happen, like Venezuela, for instance. And then we have Shahid Buttar to spend, you know, some time shitting on Nancy Pelosi.
Fantastic. He's awesome. He's incredibly bright guy.
So smart. That man needs to be in Congress. He needs, if this is where we're going, the next generation, I feel that's what makes me feel better in moments of anxiety. People like Shahid Buttar and people like, Nabila Islam, who just got endorsed by AOC's Courage to Change today.
I saw that too. That's a excellent. We interviewed her on Ring of Fire. I can't remember exactly when it was. I think you were in the office that day or something like that. I can't remember.
She's our matriarch candidate. We love her.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we'll talk more about Nancy Pelosi in the fun half, because she really let Donald Trump have it, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Does she just nail that guy. I mean, I can't believe it. It's like, it's honestly, our political opposition leaders think that they're like on the bus to camp.
That's right.
Honestly, like you're playing snaps. But we will get to that. Matt?
First of all, Nando Vila is going to be on PMBS2. So it's a full Woke Bros crew. Also, and more importantly, twitch.tv/literary hangover. I played Red
more
Dead.
More importantly.
I played Red Dead and listened to Richard Slotkin talk about the mythology of the American frontier. So check that out, folks. But yeah, tonight, Nando and Waz, it's going to be a Woke Bros TMBS. So there you have it.
Make sure you also check out The Antifada. You can find it at patreon.com/TheAntifada. They've got, I know they've got a new History as a Weapon, and, Jamie is still talking about her interview from last week. A couple of things up there. She also moderated a panel. So go, check that out. It is, patreon.com/TheAntifada. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls. We'll do some sound. We'll do some IMs. God knows what else. We'll be right back.
No, you don't want to share the news?
Oh, well, I was going to announce that tomorrow.
All right.
I was going to announce that tomorrow.
No, that's no fair.
Well, we have merch now.
Oh.
But I want to set up a
leaving me
a link. Oh, it's shop.majorityreportradio.com.
I can share it now.
Yeah. Let's check it out. Let's check out the merch here. Here we go. Look at that. There's
a bandana. So timely.
We got a bandana with the majority.
Could you just
logo.
Add that to the mix?
We get a black t-shirt. We got the hoodie.
Nice.
That hoodie is, it's a little bit more expensive than I wanted it to be, the zip hoodie, but, you know, sourcing the stuff. Everything is union made, union printed. I think
union printed and American made products.
American-made products, union-printed, and we got the mask, which says, my mask protects you, your mask protects me, and all the proceeds from the masks sales, the proceeds are going to Northwest Immigrant Rights Project, which is an organization that is doing great work out in the Northwest. Did I say Northeast? Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. So you get three of them for $30. We don't make anything on it. We didn't put a logo on it. We just want, you know, I that's saying I like, because it's basically a way of like going up to people and being like, don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
Just wear a mask for my sake. And then we got some sticker packs there. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. We've been promising this for 10 years. Merch. 10 years. It is shop.majorityreportradio.com. SASTAs? What does that mean? What's that SSS you were?
That was just me trying to get your attention without forcing through my voice on the air. On air.
SASTAs.
Ass-das. I don't get it. All right. Take a quick break. Be right back after this.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-5014-57. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.